he's got supporters. Detroit, New York, Los Angeles, inciting large-scale arrests and sympathy marches.
I'm very aware of that, Mr. Hoover.
What I do know is he's nonviolent.
What I need to know right now, what's Martin Luther King about to do next?
Mr. President, Dr. King is here.
Mr. President, in the South, there have been thousands of racially motivated murders.
We need your help, Dr. King. This thing's just going to have to wait.
It cannot wait.
You got one big issue, I got 101.
Summer it is.
Here is the next great battle.
Selma's the place, and they ready.
Hi, everybody. It's Bina 007 back for a 10-minute movie review. Today, I'm looking at the Best Picture nominee, Selma, which has been a much lauded film about Martin Luther King, and controversial because it has not been nominated for as many Academy Awards as some people think it should have been. I actually put out a podcast a few weeks ago about why I think this happened, and I do genuinely believe it's for reasons that are technical rather than prejudicial. But I have to say that having seen the film, I do think it's a great shame because it's one that is beautifully written and photographed and acted, and it really is a movie that is worthy of the man and of the civil rights movement itself. It's amazing to me that one hasn't been made before this, but this film is right up there with films like Gandhi, and I do truly believe it will be seen for decades to come as a great, great achievement. What I think makes the film effective is that it doesn't try to do a conventional biopic, and it's certainly not hagiography as some of these lives of the modern day saints can be. It focuses on a very distinct period of his life, really 1965 and the voting rights march from Selma to Montgomery, Alabama. And what this means is that when we meet Martin Luther King, he's fully formed. He's already incredibly famous, he's a Nobel Peace Prize winner, and he already has the ear of the president. Indeed, LBJ has already signed the Anti-Segregation Act. So, you know, this is King fully formed in this incredibly elegant, official, and just punch-to-the-stomach opening to the film. We have a triptych. We have King receiving the Nobel Peace Prize, conflicted because he knows what's going on at home with his people and feels kind of weird all dressed up at this ball when that's going on. We then have the bombing of the 16th Street Baptist Church, where four young girls are blown up. So tragic. And then the third part of this opening triptych is Annie Lee Cooper, a distinguished old lady, being denied her application to register to vote on the most spurious and humiliating grounds. And it's amazing because you have this almost conventional biopic opening, right? Glitzy ball gown for Coretta Scott King, the awards, which makes you think you're in a very conventional film. And then the way in which that bombing is photographed is just so devastating. And then you move immediately to Oprah Winfrey's Annie Lee Cooper, who acts with such dignity and is so profoundly humiliated that immediately you feel it, you're with her. And however much you know about the civil rights movement or think you know, somehow you are viscerally in it with her. And that's what film can do. That's why I love film. Because no matter what you think you know about something, it can make you feel it rather than just know it. And that's the power of the movies. So from that opening, we move to King speaking with President Johnson. And he's explaining to Johnson as well as to us that this is the seminal issue for black people because all the racism that they suffer that's doled out to them is by petty local officials. And if they have the right to vote, then they can turn those officials out of office. So it's a root cause. And Selma, Alabama, is in a way a root cause town because it encapsulates the very harshness of that conflict where you have a police force and petty townsfolk who are unbelievably racist and are utterly backed by their governor, George Wallace, in a very, it's such a slippery performance by Tim Roth, who I think, I mean, I'm not from Alabama, so maybe people there would say his British accent hasn't perfectly transmuted into Alabama, but to me, he embodies that absolutely complacent power He's so slippery, and the frustration LBJ feels in dealing with this little shit is unbelievable. But anyway, so this becomes the showdown. And again, what I love about this film is it's not sort of wallpapering over the cracks. We see that the movement has its factions, that there already are local agitators who are kind of resentful of the fact that Martin Luther King has driven into town and wants to take it over. It's also very clear that, you know, during this the second walk over the bridge to go to vote, when at a very pivotal point Martin Luther King decides not to go on with it, that people doubt him. That it's not that everyone agrees with every decision he takes. It's not that he has this God-given ability to always make the right calls. Maybe it was the right call, maybe it wasn't, who knows, but it's debated. And I like the fact that Ava DuVernay, the director of this film, and Paul Webb, the writer, have enough confidence in the character and charisma of Martin Luther King that they can allow him to be a failure. I also love the fact, however, that they don't allow that to somehow overwhelm the film. So this isn't revisionist filmmaking, in a way, because there would have been a temptation, I think, to, you know, very crudely contrast the genius of a man as a politician and as a man of faith with his sexual infidelities, his marital infidelities. But to do that, I think, is to fall into the trap that J. Edgar Hoover has very explicitly laid out for us, which is to sully the man and therefore the movement. And it's so delicate the way they bring in this theme. And there's one very pivotal, beautifully played, very emotional scene between Martin Luther King and Coretta Scott King, played by Carmen Ejogo, which is just stunning. But other than that, it's very firmly on the politics and the religion and the civil rights movement, which is as it should be. And really, all we're concerned with here is what are the correct tactics. And in a way, the humanity that is shown in this film is of a man, Martin Luther King, who was conflicted. I mean, yes, he's conflicted about his marriage and his marital infidelity, but the far greater conflict that we're shown in this film is that he knows that in order to move President Johnson to act, he needs to make it impossible for him not to. In other words, he needs desperately powerful front page headlines in the newspapers, and he needs to make it morally impossible for LBJ to be on the same side as Governor George Wallace. So he needs drama, and drama means violence. He needs to send good, faithful people against police that he knows are going to come at them with horses and truncheons and guns. And you can see on his face that conflict. And the reason you can see it on his face is that David Oyelowo's performance is just so amazing. I mean, he's powerful, he's charismatic. You can feel why people would follow this man into the teeth of the police with truncheons. And without that, this film fails. It's a great, great performance. It probably does deserve a Best Actor performance. I wish more voters had seen this film before they went to vote. But really, in a sense, I think this is an ensemble piece. There are so many people who give, I think, career-defining performances. Carmen Ejogo as Coretta Scott King, Oprah Winfrey as Annie Lee Cooper. Very small roles, but just so powerful. Lorraine Toussaint absolutely commands our respect as the agitator Amelia Boynton Robinson. I mean, so magisterial. I absolutely loved Tim Roth as Governor George Wallace. He had that suave, mocking charisma. I love Tom Wilkinson as LBJ, those hunched up shoulders, Wendell Pierce in a small role. I mean, so many good performances in this. And I'd say that behind the camera, I was just utterly impressed by Ava DuVernay's direction. This is not a movie like The Theory of Everything that's just a very sort of simple Hallmark Cards biopic. There's real thought gone into how to construct the depiction of violence, the sound editing that goes with it to make you feel every punch and be in that right and feel the truncheon come down. There's an amazing scene in this film where Oprah Winfrey, as Annie Lee Cooper, she's kind of been punched and she's falling backwards into unconsciousness, and the camera moves with her and it really places you at the centre of that march. And I also love the conceit that the director uses, where she has, as every scene we watch, typed up the FBI's wiretap reports just shows you that insidious monitoring that was going on at all times. And I really love the photography of this film, the warm brown, yellow, green tones. I think cinematographer Bradford Young is one of the most interesting names that has sort of come out of this year. Some amazing work he's doing. But ultimately, I think this is a film that lives or dies by how it makes you feel, whether it makes you feel the humiliation, the violence, the fear that those people had, and the courage. Can you imagine taking a short straw and knowing that as you walk 2x2 in a march across a bridge to exercise your federally statute right to vote, you walk 2x2, you're in the front row against police that you know are going to punch you, potentially kill you. It's just unbelievable to me to consider that. And, you know, as a woman of colour, it just makes you think that you sit here, at least in England, or at least for me, I can only speak for myself, very comfortable and secure in my right to vote. I mean, nothing impedes me carrying on the life I want to live. And, of course, as all great films, it makes you realise how different is it now compared to then? You know, when you read the stories coming out of America now, if you were a young black kid, would you feel that fear if you saw a policeman roll past? And I think what is also very powerful in this film is it shows how people who were white, who were other religious leaders, for whatever reason, people who were just liberal humanists and thought this was a cause worth supporting, drove for miles and came to support this great, great cause. You know, do we have the courage? Oh my God, do we even have the will to get off the couch to do that? When I think today, when I'm just reading in the newspaper that, you know, school trips are being cancelled to synagogues in London because people are afraid they'll be caught up in anti-Semitic violence, my goodness, do we not have the courage to physically stand by our fellow citizens when they, as a minority, are under threat? So for me, Selma is a great film because, like all great films, it takes academic, technical, dry knowledge and makes you feel it viscerally. And for me, it started very early on. There's a scene where a grandfather's mourning his grandson who's been shot by a racist policeman. And his performance just made me start crying. I wrote my review earlier of that scene and it made me cry writing it. And I'm starting to cry now thinking of it. And I saw this film last night. So it's a while ago since I watched it. And that is great filmmaking. It really is. When it takes something that you know already and makes you feel it, and makes you feel it for a long time afterwards. So I think Selma's a great film. And yeah, I'd really encourage you to watch it. Thank you for listening.
There are 70 million people watching. These pictures are going around the world.
We must make a massive demonstration.
White, black, and otherwise. Come to Selma.
I heard about the attack of innocent people. I couldn't just stand by.
Looks like an army out there.
This revolution goes on and on. This revolution goes on and on.
My eyes have seen the glory. 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 Hallelujah.
What happens when a man stands up, says enough is enough?